Testifying this week before the House Homeland Security Committee, Dr. Reggie Brothers, who took over as DHS's Undersecretary for Science and Technology back in April, outlined an agenda that he said would reduce the department's overall number of research programs, but make the remaining ones more impactful and more strategically focused. For starters, he's come up with a definition of what research and development actually means within the Department of Homeland Security, addressing a critique that the Government Accountability Office has leveled against the DHS S&T organization for years. Even though the office has existed since the department was first created back in 2003, there was no common agreement on what constituted R&D up until now, or how DHS components should report those activities.
Now, in July, we did release a definition of R&D, but in the past, we didn't have that definition. So that means different people can have different definitions of what research and development really is. So I think, you know, based on OMB, based on DOD definitions, NASA definitions as well, we have crafted our own definition of what R&D is. And so we've used the same type of nomenclature, basic applied development. It's then binned into different areas, which will allow us going forward to do a better job of understanding from a data call perspective who's doing what in R&D and where it lies.
A general lack of understanding of who's doing what within DHS S&T has been a persistent problem for the organization, and one of the main reasons DHS's overall management challenges earned a spot on GAO's high-risk list. In the watchdog's most recent review of DHS S&T, it found that the department's headquarters didn't know how much its components were spending on their own R&D projects. David Marr is GAO's Director for Homeland Security and Justice Issues.
That makes it difficult to oversee activities across the department. Our work also identified problems in coordination. Now, S&T coordinates with components in many different ways at many different levels. The problem is some of these mechanisms need to work better, and in some cases, new approaches are needed. Specifically, the report we issued last year found that S&T lacked a formal process to follow up with the end users of its deliverables. S&T customers were also much more likely to report that S&T's work did not meet end-user needs. In some instances, we were unable to locate an end-user for an S&T project.
Brothers said on Tuesday that he fully intends to build stronger bridges between the central S&T office and DHS components. He says he's met with the directors of all of those components at least once in the last 4 months. As one way to build more coordination, DHS has created interagency groups that mirror some of the mechanisms the Defense Department uses to communicate ongoing projects and needs amongst the military services, including a Joint Requirements Council and a Deputies Management Action Group. Beyond encouraging more discussion at the leadership level, though, Brothers says his office also needs to do a better job of building more communication between its technical experts and field staff, who will eventually use the products DHS is cooking up in its laboratories.
I mean, part of science and technology is that you can have smart engineers, and I saw this in industry, can come up with an idea that because they don't have the context of their work, they don't have the relationship with the end user, it's not relevant. It's an interesting thing, but it's not relevant. So our job then is to reach out, help them understand what the art of the possible is, and we understand what their needs are, both near-term and long-term. And I think we've started that. I think TSA is a great example because we really are working hand-in-hand with TSA right now.
Beginning in November, DHS plans to start a pilot program in which it will temporarily assign researchers from its central S&T office to work in the laboratories of component agencies.
What I'd like to see is where we actually have a model based on what I've seen in the industry, where you have a central research facility, and then these larger corporations also have research capabilities in the business areas, or in our case, these would be our end users, our components. The laboratories in the industry that have been successful, what they do is they embed their staff into their business units. That gives their technical staff members the opportunity to understand the context in which they work. So it's not just designing something that an engineer thinks is useful, it's designing something that the actual end user, the Customs Border Patrol agent, thinks is useful.
Brothers also told lawmakers he plans a new look at the overall portfolio of research investments that are made by DHS. Last month, his office released 4 visionary goals intended to help focus the organization over the next couple decades. From there, and after getting more input from industry and other stakeholders, the department plans to build a new strategic plan to determine its focus areas in the next 5 to 10 years. The spending plans of this central S&T organization are already subject to an annual review by a panel of experts, which evaluates projects based on factors like how much interest customers might have in them, their technical approach, and their feasibility. But Brothers says the projects DHS has approved in recent years have been biased toward the idea of near-term payoffs. He says he'd like to create a more balanced research portfolio that also includes the potential for game-changing capabilities for Homeland Security.
I think it's important as we go through that analytic process, that portfolio review process, I think it's important to think about these other quadrants of that graph I was mentioning to have our product, our investments. I think it's important we go through this analytic process and look across those areas. Now, the Coast Guard is also using the same process. So this process can be scaled to beyond just S&T. And this is something we can then use. The results of that process are then something that we can use as a way of not just understanding where our portfolio is, but trying to influence where the portfolio should go in the future.
Brothers told lawmakers that the high competency of the DHS S&T workforce is one factor that gives him confidence that the department will be able to produce capabilities that are more relevant to end users. But however competent that workforce is, it is not a happy one, based on the employee feedback on the annual OPM Employee Viewpoint Survey. The Partnership for Public Service, which publishes an annual scorecard of the best places to work in the federal government based on those surveys, ranked the DHS S&T office at 299 out of 300 in its latest report.
What I've been doing recently has been simple steps. I've been walking around a lot and talking to people. We're going to do a formal root cause analysis. We should hopefully have that on contract shortly to get that done. But I think in the interim, walking around, talking to people, understanding what some of the concerns have been in the past has been helpful. We've been trying to do more of empowering our workforce in the decision-making process, giving more visibility into how decisions are made and why decisions are made. I think all that's important. But I do have to agree that is a challenge. And I think it's something that I'm very concerned about and putting a lot of time into.
In Washington, Jared Serbu, FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM.